Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm glad to have
good
a live
morning.
Call with all of you guys again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yep, we're going to give
morning.
Everyone a little bit more time. I'm hoping John Day shows up because I actually wanted to publicly thank him. He had the biggest sale ever. I'm looking forward to sharing with you guys. Well, not sale necessarily, but opportunity at a sale. So we're going to wait a little bit. Anyone have any fun stories from the holidays, or are we just done talking about the holidays? We want to talk about the new year. Kind of my mindset, but anyone want to have the floor as we wait? No? Yes? Maybe so?
I'm all for a new year.
Yeah, me too. I'm so done with the holidays, Dale.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Good Lord.
Yeah, I know, right? It never freaking ended this year.
My Christmas tree's still up.
Yeah. Well, do you ever take it down, Rochelle?
No, I leave it up past Valentine's Day so I can celebrate Valentine's Day with a bunch of lights.
She's not joking, people.
I'm not.
That's kind of cool. You could just redecorate it for every holiday.
I'll tell you guys a funny story. When Julie was in high school, up to like her freshman year in college, basically, she used to work at this Christmas store, and it was this all-year-round Christmas store. So she would, I mean, literally, it was this place that had these really stupid, expensive ornaments, Christopher Radko. They're still made. They're beautiful, but, oh, my gosh, what people will pay for a Christmas ornament is crazy. Like, $40 is your entry point, and then there were people paying $300, $400 for ornaments. And the really nutty thing is, to this day, some of those ornaments are going for, like, thousands of dollars on eBay. I don't get it, but it's all good. So she worked at this Christmas store, and every year-round, just in the amount of ornaments they would sell, and their guess what their peak month was for selling ornaments?
June.
July. It was July. And because
isn't
they do this Christmas in July celebration, and people would like rush in from all over the country. There was a lady that used to fly. This is when we lived in Columbus, Ohio. There's a lady that used to fly in from Wyoming on her private plane to have first crack at these Christopher Radko ornaments. So when you guys say you're sick of Christmas, I cannot tell you how sick of Christmas I was, because I had to live it practically every day when Julie would come home from work covered with sparklies. There's only a couple professions where people end the day being covered with sparkles, and being a full-time elf is one of them. The other is probably somebody that works as a quote-unquote entertainer in Vegas. But that's aside the point. So, welcome back. I'm going to see if – let me look. Rochelle, I know you're on Mission Control. Did you see if John Day showed up? I don't think he probably did.
John Day showed
here.
Up.
He's here.
Oh, hey,
he's here.
John Day did show up. So, I want to publicly thank John Day. He actually has – set us up for what probably will be a really big deal. And John, why don't you describe what your the levers you pulled and the opportunity you've created?
Well, I don't know. There's not a lot to talk about, really. I just
humility.
I've been an advocate here at my agency for Tim and Julie Harris before he even became an HCCA. And I always talked about it. Our company was really locked into one set of fairy tales, should I say. But I just kept saying, you know, kept on my diligence and mentioning it every now and then. I couldn't really be public because we didn't I didn't want to lose my job, but I just kept at it. And finally,
well,
they
so
decided
guys, but,
they
but
needed some.
John, they don't know you're like trainer at Douglas Elliman. They don't know what your full time job is. I don't think they do. So you might want to mention to put it. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, for Douglas Elliman in New York City and Manhattan area, I'm a full time sales trainer, training instructor. So I, you know, teaching here all day and have a lot of contact with clients and can, you know, refer them, and a lot of them ask me for, you know, private help, et cetera. And I, you know, I kind of do that to get paid here. So, and my boss is in charge of training for the entire Douglas Elliman company throughout the country, Miami, Montauk, you know, Malibu, Aspen, et cetera. So finally I got him convinced, and they're thinking that they need some more people. And so he said to me, You know, can you possibly get me in touch with your friend Tim Harris you keep talking about? I said, oh, absolutely, I will. And so I set the
We were in Hawaii, basically. Yeah. I mean, but John did well, – here's – and I want you guys to realize, so he couldn't – basically his boss said if you were to be an HCCA and you start doing this thing on the side, you could know – you know, they basically were dropping pretty clear hints that he would no longer be employed by Douglas Elliman. And I don't know if you guys – maybe you don't know, but Douglas Elliman is arguably – what would be a more prestigious real estate brand? I mean, prestigious, not largest, but would be a more prestigious real estate brand in the country than Douglas Elliman? I mean, honestly, a real one, not Sotheby's that just came on the scenes recently and has a snobby name from its British auction house heritage. But it for real, honest to God, prestige, what's more prestigious than Douglas Elliman? Nationwide. Can you guys think of any? Yeah, I can't, honestly.
Yeah,
all the top agents in the country are with Douglas Elliman. So anyway, long story short, they said you can't do any outside or work for, you know, Harris as a trainer, but and yet we still managed to John's and you guys can do the same thing. And even if you're not in a situation where someone's, you know, you might lose your normal job to you know, be an HCCA, you can do what he did. So what he did is he connected us with his boss basically, and I talked to him. And we went from, well, we want to have you on a Zoom podcast to interview you, to like in that, you know, same on that same call, I said, well, let's skip the Zoom podcast. Why don't we just come up there? And then from that, now they're having us speak to three different groups in New York. He mentioned the other day he wants us to go to Rhode Island, you know, and Long Island, yeah. And so all those are going to be opportunities for us to obviously introduce more people to Premier Coaching and obviously opportunities for Mr. Day to make money. And he doesn't have to really do anything at this point. Julie and I are going to do the rest of it. Julie and I are going to go up there. We're going to do our cat and monkey show. They're covering all of our expense to go up there. So if you guys have a similar situation where you want us to fly in and it's going to be a, you know, an opportunity, it doesn't even have to be as an opportunity as large as this. I mean, we were in Hawaii with 200 people, basically. You know, so if you guys have other opportunities that are going to be similar or where you think we can make an impact to the people in the audience, just let me know and we'll figure it out. We really will.
We're working on trying to set up a live stream event as well.
Well, that'd be cool. Yeah. You guys need to go to – I mean, New York in February is going to be nice and everything. I mean, not really. So, I mean, John, why aren't we going out to Malibu right now? I mean, you need to talk with Bossman about that.
That right? Would be nice. Yeah, I'll talk with Mr. Altman about that.
Yeah, exactly. Who runs it on the West Coast? Who's the CEO on the West Coast?
The CEO, I can't remember his name. I can see his face as plain as day, but I can't remember his name.
Okay. Well, long story short, folks, is there's lots of opportunities if you want to leverage Julie and I directly to help you expand your practice, you certainly can. And the other thing this creates for John long term is obviously money, but also it creates an opportunity for him to, I mean, just being obvious, he's going to expand his influence inside this company because he's the one that's been saying, hey, you got to listen to these other people other than, you know, Tom Ferry in particular, because, well, I mean, it is, I think it'll be without bashing, you know, that's my job on the podcast. But what was the reason why the agents in your company were essentially not wanting to have Tom Ferry as their most, you know, like you guys were basically saying, you know, Tom Ferry, oh, why did you? What happened inside the company that caused the agents to sort of rebel against that? That made it to the point where you guys wanted to have an alternative. So what actually transpired?
Too expensive, basically. It was so expensive, and they weren't getting enough out of it.
Okay, so when they say they weren't getting enough out of it, I'm sure it was left undefined. I'm sure they didn't actually say what they weren't where
One
they were
call
weren't getting
a month
out of it.
And one call a month, and the base model was $6,000 a month, basically, for one call a month.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, got it. All right, so, Mr. Day, thank you. That was fantastic, and I look forward to seeing you in the beginning of next month. By the way,
I'm thrilled you're willing to come out and do this. Exciting.
I mean, look how humble you are, willing to come out to Douglas Elliman and speak to all of you guys, the managers, the executives, and 800 agents if they all show up. Are you kidding me? Of course I am. So as far as other opportunities, you guys just send them directly to me at tim@timandjulieharris.com. Does anybody else have a victory that they would like to share? And don't try to trump John because you can't. But does anyone else have a victory they'd like to share? As far as opportunities they're creating, Dale, you always seem to have a foot in the door somewhere.
I've got two classes next week that are out of my brokerage. I've got a book for – I have a class for every month sponsored by one of our title companies down here. We had the largest class they ever had in December. We were expecting 20. We got 41. And I think
nice.
I sent about 12 people that wanted coaching. And I'm talking to a small brokerage up here. I'm not trying to trump John on that one. I think they have about 18 agents about going into them on a regular basis as well. That should start in February.
What are you doing to convert those people, though, from just basically being in front of an audience and coaching leads? What are you doing to do that?
Well, just the classes and the referring. I'm trying to follow the pure little system that we kind of set up, which we can certainly talk about sometime. I do some follow-up with some of them, even after they've had their coaching calls, their new member coaching calls.
Right.
It just depends. I think we as a group need to tighten that part up when you're getting in front of people.
For example, I was thinking about that very same thing, Dale. So tell me about what you were thinking. We can just talk, have an open conversation. I had something I wanted to share with
even,
you guys.
Even to the point of where if I knew how to sign them up, I should sign them up when they're in front of me.
Got it. Okay. Could you, though? I mean, would you know enough about the product and answer their questions about what they get as far as Premier Coaching to do the sale on site?
I know enough about Premier Coaching to know what they get. I just need to know about the financing part of it and some of that. I need to know more about that, but
well, then
I
you can skip
it.
If you've got a live one, if you've got someone that's ready to go, you don't have to send them over to us. You can do it right there on site. And so this is a good point. I should have thought of this, to be honest, is if you want to do that, you just need a little notebook computer. They can actually sign up on their iPhones or whatever, you know, or Androids. You're going to need – basically all you'd need essentially to do is sit someone down in front of you, take the application, just on your notebook computer, and then the whole application process happens right there in front of you. So you'd need to have Andrew, and write this down, Andrew@timandjulieharris.com, and just tell him, Dale, and everyone else that wants to do this, that if you're serious, I can get you full access as if you were one of the members of our sales team, and you can literally process transactions just like they do. It's not difficult.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good point. I mean, you know, so but in front of larger groups or even smaller groups, the other thing to do is ask them, like, the key is after you're done presenting, even if you've done this on the webinar, then ask them to rate, like, self-identify if they're interested at all in coaching. You'll get a lot of people that are sort of marginally interested in coaching, and ask them to give you their business cards. This is just the simplest way to do it. You know, you can offer them a free coaching call, or if you have some people that are more urgent, you can have them write on their business card that, you know, call me now or something. And, like, one of the things to do is at the end of your presentation say, well, you know, for those of you who are interested in coaching, stay in your seats. We're going to take, like, 10 minutes and answer any questions. I'm going to tell you about the different programs we offer. You'll usually have nobody get up, and then you just tell them about Premier. You tell them about Premier Plus. You tell them about Premier VIP, and you tell them about Elite. Most people go with Premier or Premier Plus because it offers the greatest value. I'm actually thinking about coming out with another program that's in between Premier and Premier Plus that's less expensive than Premier Plus in anticipation of the tightening economy. And here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about having basic – this Premier offers so much value. So many people – like people join Premier and then they renew every year. You know, they don't go away. So what I'm thinking about doing with Premier is one thing I'd like to add is an accountability call that goes – that's only monthly. So, for example, an accountability coach would be given – a menu of things that everyone should be working on over a 12-month period, and then they, you know, people would be attending their Premier call, their daily Premier call. They'd have access to all the information. Some of them participate, ask questions and whatnot. Others of them, they just join, kind of go self-paced. They listen to replays, the whole thing. People's behavior is always, you know, weird. And then wouldn't it be nice if there was an option for somebody to call them once a month and say, okay, this is what you were supposed to get done this month. These are the things, the specific things that you should be doing right now as you transition in the, as you move forward in the coaching program types of things. So what do you guys think about that idea, by the way? I came up with that last night. Just basically, I thought I'd call it Premier Coaching Accountability or something like that. What do you guys think? Rochelle, what do you think, since you're doing coaching calls every day?
I think it's a good idea. I was just wondering who's going to be calling them and what they're going to say.
Of course you were.
And how do they...
Rochelle's
well,
like,
of course.
Rochelle's like, oh, shit, not more work. that's where her mind went. Oh, God, not more calls. Well,
and
okay.
Is it going to be the same person all the time? And how do you keep track of what they told you? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, so to answer your question, and I would like, if we do this, I would like to offer you guys first a position where you'd be doing that role. I really do think it's – actually, John, I'll ask you, okay? Because I was thinking about this after talking with your boss, right? And he told me what he perceived that the agents – you know, agents will say, you know, why didn't you – why wasn't this a good experience? They always say the same thing. I want more accountability. Like, you know, why didn't you go? I asked them why they didn't like Tom Ferry, and they said that. The inconsistent calls, it was by a friend. They're talking about a lot of stuff that wasn't making him money. Tom's pushing him too much towards marketing now, and you guys have pretty much the most kick-ass real estate marketing in the world, so why would you want to tell agents to do their own marketing? It doesn't make any sense. Agents should be focusing on their skills and how to price properties, especially in New York City, you know, all these sort of logical things. Yeah, and so I said, so why don't they, you know, what's the rub with, you know, and he said that price, and then he said they always complain about lack of accountability. And I said, lack of accountability is something that agents always say, but when you give them accountability, that's the last thing they want. So you start holding agents accountable when they say they want accountability, and they get really pissed off because they really don't want accountability. They just say they do. But if we were to come up with an interim product in between Premier Coaching and Plus that was like maybe $500 a month or $450 a month, that did have a scheduled, you know, somebody holding you accountable, not a drill sergeant, but somewhere in between, say, Martha Stewart and a drill sergeant, do you think that would be something that would be well received if the price point made sense?
Yeah, I actually do. I mean, we do a program here, a six-week program, and we've tried accountability, and we do accountability weekly. And let me tell you, it's tough, and they need it. And I've gotten
complaints
from my students that I treat my children when they don't do it, and I get after them. But some of them really do appreciate that and say afterwards it really made a difference in their business once they started having to. You know, they say they do it, but they don't write it down. And once they have to be accountable and write it down, it really does make a difference.
Well,
it's helped.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. So everyone comes to Premier at the same level of need. Even if they've been in the business for a long time, it's very rare you get somebody that's very, you know, I got my listing presentation, my pre-listing pack. Most of them will come to Premier. Michelle, you have my back on this, I assume. And the only thing they really know how to do is hope and pray that a lead shows up. They might occasionally buy a lead, or they get leads from centers of influence and past clients, but very few of them are actually entrepreneurial and business focused. I mean, when was the last time you had somebody that really had their act together? Other than Michael, Rochelle, when was the last time you had someone that really had their act together?
I mean, I have a couple coaching students that are just amazing, but
so
like I mean 10%? Probably 10%. Yeah, 10%,
yeah, exactly.
For sure.
That's always been my experience. And what really actually, John will laugh when I say this, but it's true. The least organized and least entrepreneurial, but the biggest ego agents are the ones that have the highest sale price. They're the ones that are actually the toughest to coach because you have to convince them despite the fact that I have one of my clients, my personal clients is a closing in February, and his commission is over $1 million on the one closing. Okay? He's kind of hard to coach right now. He's very full of himself right now. You know, he goes, you know, he has a very nice British accent, and he's very politely telling me that he's really not going to do shit. You know, he has that, and he has three other closings, and the least of the three other closings is $2.5 million. I mean, the guy's going to do $100 million before June probably with the momentum that we created from last year. So he's not that accountable, and he's not going to be held, you know, he's not really going to do what he doesn't want to do, and he doesn't want to do it at the highest level. But what you do find is the agents that are up and coming, What they really want to do is they really want to feel like they've got somebody that they have confidence in that's telling them what to do. That's the thing sometimes that agents miss is like, but you have to, unfortunately, you have to, whether they're experienced or not, you have to sell them on what it is that you're asking them to do. Very rarely do they just follow with blind faith. And that can sometimes be very, very, you know, that's a lot of work. Because you got to figure out exactly as a coach what's specifically holding this specific person back from actually having enough, you know, what they say they wanted to get their pre-listing pack, but they're not getting it done. And this is the second month in a row where they sworn they were going to get it done. So, you know, you need to coach them through all the reasons why they're not getting it done. Otherwise, they'll never actually move forward and get it done. So that's what I was thinking about as accountability. Like you'd ask a question, for example, well, let's make an excuse. Let's make a list of all the excuses why you haven't gotten your pre-listing pack done. And but what you'll do is as they go through their excuses, they'll self-identify what the real problem was, which is inevitably that they just haven't – they don't have confidence enough in themselves personally to go in front of strangers or go in front of sellers. They don't want to compete. And then you start getting to the – I'm just telling you, I'm helping you guys understand how some of these calls go. And then you start – remember, most of these people you guys have never met before. You can only know what they look like from their Facebook picture. And then you start talking to them about why they feel uncomfortable competing. And then they'll start telling you it's because they feel physically like they're not confident in how they look. That's what they'll start telling you. So when you keep on drilling down and you try to get to the root of why some people don't move forward, even when you're paying you to help them move forward, it comes down to some of the most basic, you know, ego-type fears. I don't look good. I'm worried about my – I haven't made up – you know, sometimes if they're new, they're going to say, my wardrobe is out of date and I don't want to be in a situation where – you know, this, the different little things that people come up with in their heads. And so – but that's what coaching is, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with the idea of behind PC accountability. It's kind of helping people move forward in a meaningful way. I mean, these are things obviously we'd have to teach, but – I mean, I assume that from a HCCA perspective, this sounds like something you guys might be interested in a job as far as like what – I mean, it would be – if we were to do this, if I were to have you, some of you guys do this, because I already know there's three or four of you that have already emailed me. I haven't checked my email. But if this is something you're serious about doing, but understand this would be a job. Rochelle, can you give them an idea what it's like to have 30 to 50 coaching clients?
takes a lot of emotional it's hard. I love it. Yeah, I love it. It's rewarding, but you take a lot of their emotion into yourself as well. But the reward of their successes and their accomplishments make you feel like everything you're doing is so worth it. I love doing this. But like you were talking about somebody that hasn't had their PLP done, a person that transferred from you to me, I'm not going to say any names in case anybody knows them, it's been 8 months and I'm still on him to get the damn thing done. And I did the same thing today, drilled down on all the reasons why he hasn't done it so far. And everything you said is 100% correct.
Yeah, and then so here he'll get it done, and then what's going to happen is you got to get him to pre-make about six of them, and then the homework then is going to be he has to go and see what he's doing is he'll run out of excuses to actually not do he's trying to avoid actually having to compete. He's trying
Absolutely.
To avoid not of having to be in a position where he could hear the word no. Did you guys listen to the podcast the past couple of days? You guys should try to listen to the podcast every day because it'll keep you in tune not just with us, and we're doing our best to stay in tune with literally tens of thousands of agents around the country. That's what the podcast does for us. But it also is letting you guys know the reasons why people are interested in us in the first place. So when I get feedback through email and they're saying, help me with this, or this is what I liked, or this is what I didn't like, we sometimes will, you know, deviate slightly in our messaging as far as on the podcast. But this can help you guys. Like I think Dale, you're doing. I know Dave Snowberger is doing his own podcast. I know Luis is doing his own podcast. I think Dale, I know you do a lot of media. You guys should tune into what we're saying, assuming you're trying to attract agents to you, so that you can edit your message or maybe gear your message more towards what you know from listening to us. Agents are wanting to hear. And I'll tell you what they really want to hear right now is they're all getting a little antsy. Well, you guys tell me, what are you perceiving agents are thinking about? What are you what are you sensing that they're fearful about right now in 2019? What's your consensus of the overall nature of agents in your marketplace?
They're afraid of the change. They're afraid of the shifting market and learning new skills for that market.
What's going to happen with these interest rates going up? Is it going to make it, a challenge with buyers and what's going on with the government? They're all like, right. I said, don't worry about it. Just do it.
Well, that's the answer, right? They don't have any choice. You can't control that. But, John, when they say stuff like that, all they're really doing is creating excuses not to actually take any action, you know? But I'll tell you to that point, though. And
I don't think
talking
of it
about
that
the,
way.
When we've been talking to the agents, I've been hearing problems with appraisals already happening. So because the appraisers are in the banks are getting sketchy about the values that are on these contracts, and so there's just for what it's worth, that's something else. I'm sorry, what were you about to say?
Oh, Tim, this is Jane Armstrong.
Hey, Jane.
Yeah, we're of course our market. You know, we're always the first to get hit, but we're already seeing. I've got Soteris and some of the hedge funds and that are in our market. They're backing out of transactions because they're spooked
interesting
by the market.
That's good information for me. I'm going to talk about that on the show today.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But to your other point, John Day and I had that exact conversation yesterday about agents not doing, what they need to do or not doing their homework. But I have found over the years, as an agent, I'll share everything I do with any other agent because I know I'm not worried. They're not going to do a thing. They're really
that
not going to do a thing. But I think this program would be fabulous because the people that I've signed up, I keep, trying to stay in touch with them and keep them engaged. And, are you listening to the calls? Are you doing this? Or you want to do the treasure map together?
Exactly.
It's like, it's like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree. So I think that's a fabulous compliment to your program.
You mean the accountability thing? It would be a new program.
And they feel like they're getting individual attention, which is very important.
Yes, and again, it goes back to accountability. And Jane, you just reminded me of something else. A lot of you guys will remember short sales. Yay! No, I'm just kidding. They're terrible. But listen, they're going to be back in probably 6 to 12 months. And the number one, for a long time, we had the number one short sale training program. We started it in 07 before everyone else did. And then some of the bigger names sort of liberated our content and copied it. But the gal that eventually, she actually started doing short sales by listening to one of our first short sale webinars that we did in 07. Michelle McClintock. And so Michelle is actually going through all of our short sale content. Michelle, you'll be glad to hear this. And she's
updating
all of it. And so we're going to have all of our distressed content is going to be updated. I'm hoping by the, frankly, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Within before the end of this month, probably how things normally work, it'll be before the end of the next month. But the moral of the story is that we're going to start, when you run into people that are starting to see the beginnings of, like Jane, she's already going to experience it before a lot of us. When you guys start seeing the beginnings of, don't have any equity in my house and I have to sell it, well, that's going to be somebody that's going to be a short sale customer. Who on this call has done a short sale in the past year?
Me.
Oh, I'm doing two right now, Tim.
Isn't that amazing?
This is Jane.
The short sales never went away in Vegas, though.
They never went away for me. And, back when you guys trained me 10 years ago, I was doing 30 and 40 at a time.
Isn't that amazing? And that,
but I'm
I don't
still
know
doing
I, look,
short
I,
sales, and there are people that need to be doing short sales, and they're not getting them. They're sitting there.
What do you mean by that? Oh, you mean listed properties that need to be lowered so they can sell? Yes.
They do need to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you guys understand the significance of what Jane just said? Oh, and John, here, this will freak you out. I was going to ask you for this statistic. I don't know if this is still true. But the highest percent of zombie mortgages, basically people that were in default, that weren't getting foreclosed on, I believe were in New York State. I think that's still true. I'm going to check that out before we come up there next month. But, I bet you it's still true. Because you guys had, one of the slowest systems to boot people out of their houses. So there's people that have been in their houses not making payments for, 5, 10 years.
Well, I know New Jersey is very, I don't know about New York, but I know New Jersey is very, very, very high up there because it takes at least 7 to 10 years to boot somebody out of their house.
It's amazing.
And I knew a lot of people that they said, no, why should I sell? I'm saving my money and I'm not paying my mortgage. And when they foreclose on me, then I'll have the cash in the bank and I'll buy a home outright.
Well, so I mean, where we're going to see and where we need as a group to be focusing, and you're going to hear this on the podcast, nobody else is going to talk about podcasts. Nobody else in the industry – I'm sorry, about short sales. Nobody else is going to talk about distressed property. And agents who you guys are going to be influencing and are influencing, they're going to be going, look, I was in the field today, and just like Jane just said, I ran across a seller who's expired twice, who basically has to sell or they're going to lose the house. I don't know what to do. And it's already happening. People are in our industry love to just paint the biggest, prettiest picture ever of the real estate market. They're only looking for the optimistic side, which is great, and that's easy. And there's no stress in just being an optimist. There's no work in being an optimist from a managerial perspective. But the reality of it is you have to equip your agents with every potential tool that they might need. Maybe some of them never need to know how to do short sales, never need to know how to have that conversation, never need to know how to, and those conversations suck. They're hard. They're emotionally draining. But if you have an agent, and you will, who has essentially keeps on going these appointments where the sellers are underwater or near underwater, you know that with just a slight setback in that market, that seller or that agent, rather, is going to be dealing with dozens of near underwater owners. In that case, you need to get them doing short sales, whether they want to or not, because then they're going to make a fortune. Because what happens is they'll be ahead of the market, not by like days or weeks, but by like a year. Other agents will not know what the hell to do. Their listings will expire, and you'll have, you'll be able to tell agents this sort of magic fairy dust, and not in the same kind of tension that John was just speaking of fairy dust, that you'll have a situation where, you'll have somebody who's amazingly successful because you were able to educate them on something that nobody else did. That's the kind of stuff that I really want you guys to be looking towards and focusing on. This is the reason you have to really be tuned in to what agents are telling you. And when they say the market's this or the other thing, ask them drill down questions. Find out what they're actually experiencing. Some of you guys are still active in the market, so you know what you're experiencing yourselves. But I'm curious, what are your own tea leaves telling you? Who hasn't spoken yet?
Tim, this is Jane. I've spoken, but I'll tell you where else it's coming from. I just left a networking meeting where we have a lender, and the lenders are encouraging people to take the equity out of their house and consolidate their credit cards. People are going to take the equity out of their house, the prices are going to drop, and they're going to be underwater.
We saw that before, didn't we?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Well,
just
let me tell you
something
else.
Did we not learn?
I'm going to tell you this, too. I had a coaching call with somebody. It was a podcast. No, it was a Premier Coaching member. She emailed in a fizzy because she had a bunch of closings. It was just drama. Customer service, I get a copy of all the emails that come into customer service. It's in a separate folder, and this one just caught my eye. I told customer service I was going to call her back, and I called her back, and, of course, she was like, what? You're running customer – it was kind of funny, but – I ended up having this conversation with her, and she told me that she was living off her home equity line, and she's been living off her home equity line for like a year. But a lot of people have done that. That's not new. A lot of people do that. But what had happened, and I hadn't heard about this happening since 2007, is that her home equity line was capped. In other words, they weren't letting her borrow against her home equity line more than what she already owed, even though technically she still had more equity she could borrow out of it. Do you guys understand what I just said?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. The last time I said this is the third time, last time I saw that happen was back in 07, before everyone knew the market was crashing. Bank of America started capping their home equity lines and not letting people borrow. They're doing it in Southern California. They were doing it in Vegas. They were doing it in Miami. So they basically said, we know that the market's going to go to shit, and we're going to make it so you can't basically make your house more underwater by essentially borrowing every cent of equity out of it. That's already starting to happen. Is anyone else talking about that?
Nope.
I'm not.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now,
see it in the appraisals. You'll see it in the appraisals.
You will. That's where it will happen, is because what's going to happen is the appraisers are going to start putting the kibosh on deals, and agents that don't know how to negotiate transactions are going to be, you know, you guys are like John, you guys are in managerial positions in your brokerages. You better be freaking ready, because you're going to have more diverse, crazy problems coming at you in the next like 6 to 12 months than you've ever experienced before. So you yourself better be learning the premier content, because, frankly, we've been there, done that. You know, there's not very many scenarios that we haven't dealt with, especially after the last, you know, the real estate crisis that happened 12 years ago. Anybody else want to share their experience? Look, you don't have to be taking a negative stant or a pessimistic. I don't even feel I'm being negative or pessimistic. I just think I'm being honest. But is there anybody else who wants to share their own perceptions of what their marketplace is telling them this year is going to be about? Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet? Stan, you want to contribute here? Luis?
Well, the only thing I'm seeing is that, you know, obviously there's the inventory situation, but our market hasn't got to the balloon thing, so it's not going to be letting out a lot of air, because it's maintained pretty solid, and so I don't see a big problem in my local market in Traverse City, Michigan.
Okay, so you're in Michigan. I'm curious, what happened in your market during the last housing crash, or the last, or all previous recessions, especially the last one? What happened to values in your marketplace?
Well, they decreased, but not nearly to the extent as it did in other regions within the state or in the country.
Okay, so how much did they decrease to the point, have they come back and recovered all loss that was lost during the last housing crisis? Have properties reinflated to the point where they were selling at the same prices at 07 and 08? Are they still under that price?
They're about the same price.
Okay, do you guys understand that, what he just said? In his market, and by the way, Columbus was like this. It hasn't been for like the past 5 or 6 years where Julie and I sold, but this is how it was. In many parts of the country, and again, as you guys start taking on coaching clients and you start expanding your reach, you're going to run into the reality that in many parts of the country, real estate does not appreciate. And it never really has. It barely keeps up with inflation. That's what happens in many parts of the country. So those of you who are on the coast who are experiencing, who have come to see real estate appreciation almost as an entitlement, that's an abnormality for most of the country. Do you guys know that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that surprising any of you?
That surprises me.
I bet it does, because you're in Manhattan. All right, somebody's making farting noises. let me figure out who that is so I can use them. Hold on. It was Rick Jansen. Oh, that's unfortunate, because I wanted to call on Rick. Rick, you are the one making funny farting noises, so you're muted. All right, so, John, you've never experienced that. You're experiencing that now in Manhattan. Properties, well, tell the listeners what's happening in your market right now. I read your report that you sent me yesterday.
You know, there's only a slight downtick so far, really, looking at things from last year. And it all depends on if you're looking at co-ops or if you're looking at condos. Condos are selling more now than I think co-ops are selling more now than condos. It's there's a slight difference. It's not a major decrease right now in the city. But we have over the past, say, 3 years, have been kind of continually going down.
Okay, so that's what's interesting, and that there's a difference. And again, this is, as you guys start to take a national stage in your own coaching practices, you need to understand Manhattan, and it's not just Manhattan, it's a lot of markets, has been on the decline for, this is what, year three or like year three and a half?
Yeah, three and a half. They saw it in London, and then they started Los Angeles and New York caught the bug.
That's right.
And now it's
Miami too.
Inward.
Yeah, Miami, yeah. John, the prices, so, and some of these big luxury buildings are off 30 and 40%. You can look, I have clients down there, and they send me copies of the MLS, and you can see what the people originally paid versus what they're for sale for now, and they're down 30 to 40%. Now, even in a market like that, though, there's still hotbeds of things that sell like if it were still a seller's market. So, look, guys, my point
is. Yeah, exactly.
The price range is so variable here that it really depends on what price range you're looking in. That makes the difference what the market's doing.
What's the high market?
If you're 5 to 10 million, you're really suffering. If you're in the 1 million to 2 million, you're doing okay. If you're below 1 million, you're doing better because prices are coming down. If you're a buyer, you've got a great time to go out and buy.
But isn't that crazy? For a long time, the average sale price in your market was basically 2 million bucks. That was the hot market, like 1.8 to 2.3. And now the hot market is less than a million. And that happened in less than 3 years. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
Exactly.
So look, guys, all of these things, what we're seeing is the same pattern that happened back in 07, but it's happening slower, which is good. It's wonderful because we're avoiding panic, which tells me and should tell you too, and this is the point, that things aren't going to fall as far. I don't think we're going to see any – I think we'll see probably 20 to 30% of the shit show we saw back in 07, just to be succinct with my words. I don't think it's going to be as bad. I don't think as many people are going to be hurt. And there's lots of reasons why we don't need to talk about it. I'd been asking everyone on our podcast to listen to those podcasts Julie and I did on the resetting housing market. Those podcasts have turned out to be some of the most popular ones we've ever done before. It does a great job of explaining from an agent, agent-to-agent perspective, but also the content there is killer for presenting to a live audience. And on the podcast, the script of what Julie and I used is there. So if you guys have an event that you're doing, all of you guys who have your own podcasts and whatnot, you need to be seriously considering just doing your own – just copy our content exactly. You have license to, literally. And use it and say there's four phases to a real estate, essentially real estate reset. And then take them through all the bullet points of each of the phases of the market. And then as you're reading the bullet points, relate it, assuming you're preaching to or you're presenting to a local market, tell them how it relates to the local market. They will love you for that. And agents in particular and brokers and office managers need that information because even though they have access to MLS information, they really don't know how to discern the information. They don't know how to dissect it. But what they really don't know is they don't know how to present it. If I were to give a normal person a stack of the data, of what's going on, they will have no clue how to present it to a group of people in such a way that group of people could actually understand it and have something actionable and practical from the presentation. That's what hopefully, so I strongly encourage those of you who have opportunities to be in front of agents this time of year, because I too am sensing what you guys are sensing is a lot of discomfort. There's this undertone that seems to be omnipresent in the industry right now of I'm not sure what's going to happen. Does anyone on this call disagree with what I just said? Because I'd be curious about what your perspective is, and I mean that sincerely. Is there anybody that does not is are we not in lockstep with what I just said?
Nope.
Rick, I'm going to unmute you, assuming you're not.
Let me just jump in real quick.
Julie's on the call.
Yeah, I'm back.
Julie's a doctor.
Dr. Adventures, yes. Day 4, strep throat, of course. Anyway, I've been listening to what you're saying, and I wanted to make sure that they're clear of this underlying thing. What I'm seeing from calls is two things. The agents that did go through it before have some PTSD from it. They're freaked out that it's going to happen again. And the ones that didn't have fear of the unknown. So this content has value to both of those ends of the spectrum. The big difference is you are able to educate them on the phases of a real estate reset now versus last go-around where it snuck up on everybody and kicked their butts. So remember, knowledge is confidence, and ignorance equals fear. So if you're picking up the fear vibe, it's because they either did go through it and are freaked out and have not talked themselves off the ledge because it's not going to be exactly the same go-around, or because they have fear of the unknown because they've heard cautionary tales. That's all I have to say. I'm going to remute myself and back to Rick.
That's incredibly important. And so, there it is, guys. I want you to enter this year when you're thinking about your HCCA career. I want you to enter this year more than ever, not acting like a normal real estate agent, not acting like just everyone else who's in the industry. If you want to make yourself different in the marketplace, be the person that's going to tell them the truth. Even if you know they don't want to hear it, And maybe they tell you when you tell them they don't want to hear it. We get that a lot. But what happens is they'll come back and they'll thank you. You know, they'll thank you. And that's the fact that you are willing to tell them something that made you uncomfortable telling them, and the fact that you're willing to tell them something that no one else was willing to tell them, makes you of huge value to them long term. Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. Okay? Any other questions or thoughts? I am muting somebody. Trying to find who that is.
You were going
to
ask for something, and I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. All right, guys. So here's your homework. If you've not done this yet, I want you to – oh, I will get back to doing the interviews with you guys. I just got a little behind, so I apologize. Those of you I had to reschedule on, I will definitely get you rescheduled, so no worries there. We're updating the short sale, and eventually we'll do the REO information. There's not really that much to update yet because that end of the industry is reforming now. And by the way, as soon as I have new REO lists and I know what asset managers are going to be active and all the rest of it, I'll certainly tell you guys first. I'm working on that. And then also, I'm glad you guys are supportive of the idea of the PC accountability. I'm going to have to work on that with Julie and think about how to do that. I personally think that would be a great idea because it does give somebody an opportunity to have really a direct accountability along with their PC call. So I think that's a great idea too. So yeah, that's it, guys. Make sure you go and listen to the Real Estate Reset calls. If you need me for anything, always email direct, tim@timandjulieharris.com. And you guys can call too, 512-758-0206. Save my cell phone number. It's 512-758-0206. You guys have a fantastic day, and Julie and I have to get ready for the podcast that starts in 10 minutes. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.